Ani Vak Pranash Chakshu Shrotra Matho Balam Indriyani Cha Sarvani Sarvam Brahma Upanishadam Maham Brahma Nirakuryam Mama Brahma Nirakarot Anirakaranam Astva Nirakaranam Me Astu Tadatmani Nirateya Upanishad Sudharmaha Te Mai Santu Om Shanti 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 Hi. Page 140. Athendram Abruvan. Magavannetad. Vijanahi. Kimetad yakshamiti tatheti tadabhya dravat tasmat tirodathe. Satasmineva kashe striyamajagama Bahushobhamanam Umagam Hemavatim Tagam Hovacha Kimetad Yakshamiti. To her, he said, Kimetad. Indra asked, Uma, Kimetad Yakshamiti. Who is this? Who was that? Not who is, but who was now, because gone. Who was that? Then on page 149, now Uma replies there. Sa Brahmeti Hovacha. Brahmanova Etad. Vijaye Mahiyadvamiti Tato Heva Vidanchakara Brahmeti Sa Hovacha. She said, Uma is now replying to Indra. She said, Sa Hovacha. What she said? Brahma iti. Whatever you saw there, whatever you experienced there, it was Brahman itself. Let me just clarify those words. Many people are confused with those. See, we keep hearing about Brahmaji. Brahmaji, who we call in English language as creator. Remember I was telling you that word also is not so. Anyway, we call Brahma, Vishnu and Mahesh, Shiva. We say those names. Huh? So in that Brahma, that name when we say, that is different from what you see here. It's like a Brahma. See, there's one long A and one short A. So whenever this short Brahma is used, that is referring to the absolute reality Brahman. Brahman and Brahma is one and same. When we say Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh, that is different, huh? Brahmaji, there is the creator, what we call as creator. So here, what she's referring to, or she said, it is Brahma or Brahman. It is the absolute reality itself. So she indicates to Indra, and Brahmanaha va etad vijayaha avijaye mahiyadvamiti. You all became elated thinking that you were the ones who were responsible for your great victory and achievement and all that. But it was Brahmanaha. It was Brahman's achievement and victory. In other words, whatever is there in the world, whichever is going on in front of us now, whichever is happening even through us, it is all his victory. It is all done by him. And if you were not there, he will get somebody else to do it. That is all. Whatever it is, anything you may have achieved. And some people design some big spaceship, goes to the moon and all. So if those people were not there, Bhagwan's world is infinite. They're infinite jivas and beings. He will find somebody and do it. In that way, we impute all achievements and actions and acquisition and everything we impute to God and not to ourselves. The purpose is, in doing that, our ego gets thinned out. Our ego vanishes slowly, so it wanes. And if we go the opposite, the ego gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and we are bound in the samsara forever. That is the idea. So instead of going, making the ego bigger and fatter, you try to thin out the ego. Let it vanish. So, Indra came to know that adorable spirit was Tathaha Heva Vidanchakara Brahma Iti. He came to know that adorable spirit was Brahman. Now, the next verse tells that these three gods, Indra, Agni, and Vayu, because they came in close proximity to that Brahman, they excel. They supersede. In other words, even though like Vayu and Agni, they would not have known it, it is referring to students who on the spiritual path, because of their great degree of spirituality, become close to that Brahman, close to getting even a flash, because they saw that bright light also, na? But they could not ascertain what it was. But there is some closeness, proximity to that truth. As compared to somebody who is, they have not even heard this word Brahman. So a student like you, for instance, who is being exposed to this, your mind is coming closer and closer to understanding the existence of some greater reality that is all-encompassing, that is all-pervasive, that is the substratum for all things in the universe. So your mind is coming closer and closer. So here, the three of them coming close to that adorable spirit symbolizes the sadhaka whose mind is studying this all day, all his life, and is coming closer and closer. So in other words, as a sadhak, you will supersede or excel, go beyond those people who never even thought. Now, that also we should not say, oh, so that means I am better. Now, again, see, ego. It's an amazing story in Balkand where Narad is able to overcome Kamadev. And Kamadev said, my God, Narad, I was not able to conquer you. You conquered me. Even Lord Shiva could not conquer me. And when Narad heard that, oh, you mean I supersede even Lord Shiva? So just one moment ago, he had conquered Kamadev. And Kamadev only told one thing in the air. And how easily he was conquered. The ego became. And then Narad goes to Lord Shiva. Because he has to let Lord Shiva know that I am better than you, you know. So he goes to Lord Shiva and tells, I conquered Kamadev. He didn't tell that you could not conquer. He just told, I conquered Kamadev. So that let Lord Shiva figure it out for himself. I conquered Kamadev. So Lord Shiva realized that the ego has become little But in the American language, it's called puffed up. So, Lord Shiva thought, I have to do something about this fellow, you know. You need a pin. Gets deflated. So Lord Shiva said, Narad, okay, you have told me, you know, you superseded me even. But let me tell you one thing. Please do not tell this thing to Lord Vishnu. So, Lord Shiva adds one little line at the end of that statement. But Nara did not hear this line. What is it? Please do not tell this thing to Lord Vishnu in the way in which you have told me. So Nara did not hear that last part. What Lord Shiva meant is, you came and you told me with a lot of abhiman. So if you're going to tell it to Lord Vishnu, don't go and tell it with all this abhiman. But Narad only heard the first part. Don't go and tell this to Lord Vishnu. So immediately he thought, because when ego is at work, you hear what you want to hear, you know. So he thought, oh, this fellow just realized that I superseded him. And he doesn't want anybody else to know because he will look bad. So what does Narada do? Straight to Lord Vishnu he goes. Lord Shiva had also told, even if that topic comes up, while he was telling, even if such a topic comes up, and you change the topic, you know, and don't tell it like this. He goes there, and Lord Vishnu is sitting peacefully. The topic doesn't come up. So he makes the topic come up. See ego at work? That is how it works, actually. Well, Nara did exactly what Lord Vishnu, what Lord Shiva told him not to do in this way, and he did it exactly in that way. And Lord Vishnu also realized that ego is. And then he makes a whole big story, city, this, that, Swayamvara, and all sorts of things. And in the end, and you know, the higher you climb, harder you fall. Narad got such a crash landing. And when human ego is what? When you get into one trouble, instead of coming out from that trouble, you get yourself into another. After getting into that trouble and crashing, now, instead of realizing his folly, he even gives a shrap to Lord Vishnu. From one to... No, you cannot give a shrap to anybody without that thing having effect. It is said that Gautam Rishi, who gave shrap to Ahalya, Sri Ramana Maharishi has written, I've seen in his book. Ramana Maharishi has written that Gautam Rishi gave shrap to Ahalya, and in the end, Ahalya got the touch of Bhagwan Sri Ram. She came out all the better. But Gautam Rishi for 6,000 years could not sit in one spot because of that shrap. His mind was so agitated. 6,000 years, Sri Ramana Maharishi writes, he could not sit down. What? You cannot give shrap without you yourself getting that? So when Lord Vishnu tried to teach him this lesson and he fell and everything, now instead of just say, okay, Bhagwan, I erred. I made a mistake. Maaf kijiye. Instead of saying that, he gave shrap. That is why Narad is a globetrotter. He also cannot sit in one place. He cannot sit down anywhere for too long. He goes everywhere without passport and visa. All right. So, now, these three gods, it is said in the next line, in next verse, number two, that they supersede, they excel, because they came close. And knowing that in your spiritual journey also, don't let the ego get inflated by any such thing. You should be thankful to God all the time. Have gratitude. Look, I had this opportunity to come to this camp to study Vedas, to, you know, Upanishad, to study this thing. Always be grateful to God for letting Him express through this BMI in this way. That is the idea. Tasmadva. Ete devaha. Atitaram. Iva. Anyan devan. Yadagnir. Vayurindraste. Hyenanedishtam. Paspreshuhu. Te hyenat. Prathamaha. Vidanchakara Brahmeti. These three are to be counted as ahead. They are to be counted as ahead means they are to be seen as those who have excelled among the gods. Among all the gods, they atitaram eva anyan devan. Then all the other devatas, they atitaram means they excel, they supersede. Because why? He nedishtam pas prishuhu means they as though touched, they came so close to that reality, they as though touched that reality, means they became in proximity of that reality. The person who is staying close to God, who is staying close to God in spirituality, that person is in the eyes of the rishis and the Upanishads and all that, that person, see, look here. A rishi comes and he sees this group of people here. He will always prefer to sit down and have some word with a group of people like this than to go in McDonald's and catch everybody who's sitting there. Okay, come now, we'll have satsang. What satsang you have in McDonald's? So there's a preference. It means he holds such people in high esteem. The Upanishad also is indicating that sort of thing. That these three gods, they're held in higher esteem because they came in such close proximity to reality. And among the three now, among three of them, Indra even supersedes, because the two of them went back and did not tell anybody that they were embarrassed or anything like that. They just went back and said, well, we could not know that. Even though they came close, they went back and said, we could not know what that reality is. But Indra went a little bit further. So the next verse says, Indra even supersedes these two. Tasmadva. Indraha. Atitaram. Iva anyan devan sahyenanne dishtam pasparsha sahyenat prathamaha vidanchakara brahmeti. Indra came closest because the yaksha vanished and in its place Uma was standing there, and then Uma instructed him that what you just saw was Brahman, the reality. So he even came a little bit closer. He did not retreat. And one more thing. The idea is, you know, as we go deeper inside our own being, our own personality, deeper and deeper we go, there will come a point in each sadhak's journey where he really comes close to that reality. But from that point, so many sadhaks either turn back or get stuck and cannot move forward. In your meditation, you have to look for that. Usually at that point, the greatest obstacle is fear. Because it is at that point that the jiva has to give up his individuality and merge And the last piece of arsenal, the last piece of weapon in the arsenal of the jiva is fear. Prior to that, there's desire, you know, there's distractions, agitation, so many other things. They keep us from going inside. But after all of those things have been conquered, the last thing for the jiva to merge into reality, the jiva uses this thing called as fear. And that fear causes him to retreat. So you have to look up. Because that time, the jiva has to give up his individuality totally. He has to, in other words, commit spiritual suicide. So there's a great fear which enters the heart, and the person quickly retreats from there. So there's always a retreat. So whatever you see here also, the two of them came close, but there is also retreat. And when, see, if you notice, when Yaksha told, okay, burn this grass, blow this grass, this piece of grass, both of them could not do. And they came back in fear of letting others know that they failed. So they did not say, well, I could not burn a blade of grass. There's always a fear in human's heart to let other people know of our weaknesses. That I could not do this or I could not do that. So we don't tell anybody. So they also, you see, that time also fear was there in their heart. It's a symbolic thing which actually relates to a real process that happens in a sadhak's journey. There's always fear in that last moment. Why? In the Upanishad it says, Dvayat Bhayam. From duality, there is fear. There, between the individual jiva and Brahman, when there is a split, the first thing comes is fear. Now, if you're going in the other direction, for the jiva to merge with Brahman, that means the last thing also will be fear. Because that is the first thing that comes. From duality comes fear, it says, the Upanishad. Wherever there is duality, there is fear. You have to think about that generally, you'll see. If there's a strong duality between you and some other person, you will always be afraid of the other person. If there's oneness between you and the other person, you're never afraid. You see? You're always afraid of things which we do not know, because there's you and there's that unknown thing. But if you know, it brings closeness. And if closeness is there, then fear is not there. So, in the reverse journey, when the jiva has to merge back with Brahman, the last thing that comes is the first thing that had come in the first place, which is fear. So here, the two of them, they retreat, but Indra persisted a little bit. And for the one who persists, something will happen. The appearance of Uma there is also symbolic of grace of the Guru. It is symbolic of the grace of the Guru. At that moment when the fear comes, if one persists, the grace of the Guru descends upon that person. So she appears there. And the grace of the Guru makes everything clear to that person. You see? So it says here, Sir, he enat prathamaha vidanchakara brahmiti. That Indra, he is to be counted as first and foremost among, he supersedes, he excels, because he was the first who came to know that what they all saw, means all saw. And two came very close, but Indra was the first who came to know that that is indeed the reality, that is Brahman. So he supersedes all the other devatas. That is the idea. Then, the next verse, it's a very, very mysterious verse. If you read, let us say you read Gurudev's translation of that verse, you read Swami Gambhirananji's translation of that verse, Swami Ranganathanji's translation of that verse, or who you go on reading, everybody will give their own translation of that verse. So what do? You read and give yours also. That is absolutely fine. See, Upanishads are wonderful in this way. Tasyaisha adeshaha. Yadetad vidyuto vyadyutada itinyami mishada iti adidevatam. This is now Sri Gurudev's translation. This is the description of Brahman, description by means of an illustration. That phrase in the brackets, that is not there in the verse. Huh? He shone forth like the splendor of the lightning. He disappeared within the twinkling of the eye. This is the comparison of the Brahman with reference to the Devas, his manifestation as cosmic powers. So all that, all those long translation has to be actually milked out of those few words which are there in Sanskrit. So what we can gather from it is this, that the sadhak, and many times in his first point, the sadhak at many times in his meditation, because this is talking about a sadhak who is in meditation regularly, yeah? Many times in his meditation, he will get flashes of that reality. It will not be a permanent feature, but he will get flashes. But as soon as the flashes come so fast, just like lightning, and they also disappear. They come and go. So that is the first point we gather from it. Then he says, this is the comparison of Brahman with reference to the Devas. The sadhak also has to remember that all the cosmic powers which we see manifest in this universe, the forceful wind, the rain, what about the gravity of this earth, the speed and power with which this earth is going around the sun, what magnificent power it is. Huh? All of these powers are nothing but manifestations of that absolute reality. So one has to keep on reminding oneself that it is that same reality which abounds everywhere in everything. You know, when we say phenomenal powers in the world, we usually only think about great big things like wind and sun, you know, and gravity and all such big things. But do you know, if you look at these trees outside, for instance, right? That tree is 100 feet tall. 100 feet tall. And from the earth, that tree has to take water from 50 feet down and pull that water all the way up to the last leaf on the top. So 50 feet down, 100 feet up, 150 feet. You stand on a building with 150 feet and take a straw and try to pull water from a bucket down below. You will see how difficult that thing is. And every tree, simple tree, which appears to be doing nothing, is doing that thing every second. What great phenomenal force is right there in these simple trees? Just only we don't think it. So all these forces manifesting in the universe in so many different ways. See, water is filtering under the earth everywhere, cleansing itself, and then coming out in pure water some other place so we can. What is going on in the whole earth? So that reality is the one that has manifested as all of these things everywhere around us in so many wonderful ways. Look, this fan. It blows on the skin and makes the skin cool. It happens, but none of us think how it happens. Simple thing. We never give time thinking how it happens. But it is this reality which has manifested so multifariously in this world and making all wonderful things happen. So that reality is all around, and in our meditation, it flashes like lightning comes and goes. This is for a meditator. All right. This is the Upadesh. This is the description of this Brahman in the story. And it is this Brahman which is making our mind also function. Now see, whatever we have studied here in these days, whatever we have been thinking about, whatever we experience in this world, whatever we come to realize, this whole everything is done through the mind. We had no other instrument. My hand cannot say, see, the book is here. Okay, I'm reading. You cannot read with your hand. So you, if you could have done that, well, that would have been nice. Finish. Turn page. Read next page. But it doesn't work like that. Everything has to go through the mind. So this mind is functioning and works speedily, all because of the manifestation of that same reality through the mind. See the here now. Athadhyatmam yadetad gacchati vacha manaha anena cha etad upasmarati abhikshnam sankalpaha. So the mind takes sankalpa, it works and does whatever it does, thinks, remembers, and all such things. How many things, how many functions are going on in the mind? And see, today or these last few days, we are also thinking within the parameters and bounds of logic. You have to think. Nothing which will be said in the Upanishad will be devoid of logic. Some logic will be there. So the mind also holds itself within logical parameters, you see. So all such functioning, remembering, thinking, calculating, analyzing, judging, planning, reflecting, meditating, concentrating, all such things are being done by the mind means mind-intellect consortium, both of them. And all of those things are made possible only because of this reality. And how far is not that, you know, control tower is here and the plane is driving over there. So they call and they tell, okay, now turn left, turn right, you know, turn this way, whatever. It is not that one is some distance away and controlling the other one over there. The reality is right where the activity is going on in the mind. The reality doesn't control things remotely. That's one more thing you have to remember. Reality doesn't make anything function remotely. Reality is very much there, not making it function, but being the functioning of the thing. You understand that? There's a difference. You're here and controlling over there. Remote control. It's not remote control. This is, if you see something going on in the mind, it is reality who is manifesting as that function going on in the mind. So close. What an amazing thing, huh? God doesn't want to, he's not remote from anything in the universe. He's the very thing itself as it is happening. So the mind is having sankalpa, wishing, willing, whatever it is doing. Reality is right there manifesting as that sankalpa, manifesting as that wish, manifesting as that activity. That is the idea. Very wonderful verses coming down here at the end. Huh? Whatever, if the mind is seeing something, thinking of something, that reality is there making it happen. Now some other name is given for that reality. Nice name. I always wondered why this name never caught on. But this Upanishad tells, this reality is called as what? Taddha. Tadvanam. Nama. Tadvanam iti. Upasitavyam. Saya etadevam. Vedabhihi. Hainam. Sarvani bhutani. Samvanchanti. It is said that this reality, Brahman, is to be known as, is also well known as Tadvanam. That is a name for reality, Tadvanam. But nobody ever uses that name. That's a nice name for the reality. The one who is to be worshipped as Atman of all living beings. He is the self of all beings. is to be meditated upon as Tadvanam. Tadvanam means the one who, see, Tadvanam in Sanskrit means forest. Vanam. So that forest, symbolically, you can give some meaning to the name. The forest is there in which all things get lost, or once you enter, you don't know how to come out, isn't it? Forest is like that. It's something which you enter and you don't know how to come out. So Tadvanam, that reality is such that one who enters, drop of water entering into the ocean, how it will come out? Any possibility? No possibility. So that is one meaning of the name. So Brahman is called as Tadvanam. So what we should do? He says it is to be meditated on with that name. I sit and I think that reality is such that if I merge, there is no return. It is to be meditated on like that. That is the idea. All beings have to meditate on that, using that name. Then, the next verse is also very humorous. The student, after all of this teaching of Upanishad, he tells the teacher, "Sir, O great Gurudev, please teach me Upanishad." But Shankaracharya says, the student is not being sarcastic or anything. He tells for a reason. But it could be read otherwise as well. See. Upanishadam bhoho bruhiti uktata upanishada brahmim vava ta upanishadam abrumeti. He said, Upanishadam, oh, bho, bruhi, please tell me Upanishad. And teacher, so what do you think I've been telling all this time? So one way to interpret is, look, really, among a bunch of students, there will always be one like that, you know. When the whole thing is over, he said, but when are you going to teach Upanishad? Means the possibility that there may be one student like that. Shankaracharya says, no, the student is not of that caliber. He said the student is very wise. And why he says like this, please teach me Upanishad, what he means to say, oh great teacher, is there anything else which you have left out? Please tell me. That is what he means. But this is Shankaracharya's interpretation. But that is not written in the words. It is only interpretation. You could interpret either way, that there would have been one student sitting there who had no clue what was going on. So when the whole thing is over, then he said, but when are you going to teach Upanishads? Both interpretations are possible. And the teacher says, my dear, I have taught you Upanishad. What do you think I've been teaching all this time? I've already taught, or that also, yes, I have taught everything. There is nothing else to be taught. Everything is told already. Ukta, that means told, finished. I told you, completed it. I have said all that, whichever has been imparted to you. Brahmim vavata upanishadam abrumeti. It is the saving knowledge of Brahman, which has been imparted to you. And suppose you did not get it, even though it was imparted to you, which most likely is the case anyway. Imparted to you but did not get it. So theek hai, you now take a step back and engage yourself in more sadhana, right? So that when you come around next time, you will get it. Like, for example, you go into bat and the pitcher pitches, and tharam, you strike, then nothing. You miss. 3 times, you missed. Then, strike out. I should not be telling this. I should be telling cricket. You go to bat. The bowler bowls. First ball, duck. You come out. So then you come and you reflect. Okay. Maybe I did not practice enough. Maybe I did not go there and develop my concentration. You know, all the, I did not listen to that coach well. Is that all sorts of things? All sorts of things like that you think. So you go, you practice, you listen to the coach, you practice again, you take all his advice, you know, and keep practicing. So that next time when you go there, six. First ball, six. So if first time you did not get it, go back, reflect, do whatever you have to do, and again, come back. So next verse has that indication in it also. Now see, this is number 8. Tasyai tapo damaha. Karmeti pratishtha. Vedaha. Sarvangani. Satyamayatanam. Well, we go back and tasya, the person, if he does not get it, you go back through what? Tapaha, Damaha. We go back now and practice. Make sure that we have all of these things in place. I have done enough tapas. Tapas means, in the word in Sanskrit, tap means to burn. The root in Sanskrit is tap, to burn. So you, tapas means whatever austerities I am doing, I should burn. Burn means suffer. Human beings, I tell you, if we go to meditate, we want that your room must be air-conditioned. So I don't want any burning, any suffering. Seat must be nice and soft. See, in Gita, it tells only, what is that? Kusha grass, deer skin, piece of cloth. It doesn't tell any. When kush grass, we interpret as cushion. Isn't it? So we put a nice thick cushion. And that has to be soft. No. Some little bit of burning should be there. Some hardship, na? Otherwise, this human being, he likes too many comforts. And that comfort, he gets sidetracked with the comforts only. So tapa, go back and do some. Tapas. Dhamma, control of all sense organs. All of these things we should have perfected before we come again. You see? Karma iti. Dedicated work. If I have not done my duties, I'm dedicated them to the Lord. I only all my life working selfishly only for myself. This mind will not allow me to sit properly in meditation. If only selfishly I am living, thinking only about my own achievements and what I have to get and what, you know, still have to achieve and those things. If that only I am doing all my life and there was never any dedication in my work, I dedicate this to Bhagwan. I am doing this work for him. Or even better, he is doing it through me. If that type of dedication is not there, when we sit in meditation, mind will be going everywhere. It will be gone for half an hour, then you hey, it went. And Guruji gives a nice story of some man. He was looking in Kanpur or Lucknow somewhere. When that man was meditating and he was doing like this. So he shook him and said, what are you doing? He said, my mind is going, I'm trying to catch it. Like that. But the one who has not done the tapas and dedicated work and all, you know, that is what will happen to the mind. It will go and he'll be trying to catch like that. Now, this is not real meditation. What you'll be doing on that seat? You'll be making a comedy show. In meditation, you became a comedian. So all such nice sadhanas, we are supposed to have done them well. And then when we sit there, immediately the mind plunges into a state of silence. It stays home. It stays at its root because it has actually done fulfill all the roles it was supposed to have fulfilled in the proper way outside. So here it just sits quietly. So make sure that you engage yourself in some strong tapas. It says that the knowledge is the saving knowledge. The Vedas are the limbs and truth is the abode. Truth means self is the abode. Vedas are the limbs. It means we are using the limbs to get all the things done. So we're using the Vedas to do all our tapas, to do whatever. We're taking guidance of Vedas. We do tapas, we do sadhana, we do whatever it is. And we sit down. And now we enter the abode of truth. Abode is our own self. That is the idea. And the last, the person who is able to come to know this reality, he destroys all sins. We'll see this word in a very interesting word. Yova etamevam.
Yova etamevam.
Veda pahatya.
Veda pahatya.
Papmanam.
Papmanam.
Anante swarge loke. Jyeye pratitishthati pratitishthati iti iti. The last word is iti. So, the person, yova etam evam veda, he who knows this truth, veda means who knows this truth, who comes to know this truth, which is being taught in the Upanishad, means he who merges with himself. Knowing truth here means becoming truth. So, he who becomes this, apahatya papmanam, he destroying all sins, having destroyed all sins. So there are two things to be understood there. In my sadhana, in my path, the number of sadhana and things that I'm doing, that itself destroys a great amount of sins. But it doesn't destroy all sins. When I merge, all sins get destroyed in that merging. And so there are two different things there. So what is the meaning of these sins now? Please understand, in Hinduism, when we say sin, you see, I do not know if it is that we have received some shrap. It might not be fair to say that. It is just simply that we are born in a world of duality and your mind will always be ripped apart by two different sorts of thoughts. So in the Western world, sin has a different meaning, and in Eastern traditions, in our tradition, sin all has a totally different meaning. So, in the Western world, they make a list, you know, all these things they are considered to be sin. What is that? Some name is given also. Commandments. Right? There's some commandments here. And if you break any of the commandments, that means it is sin. You see? But we never made any such clear dichotomy in our tradition. There is no such thing. Like, for example, I'll give you a simple example. Thou shalt not kill. If you kill, sin. Nah. But what is Krishna telling Arjuna? Because the rishis thought about this matter very deeply. They thought about it very deeply. So, after thinking deeply, you cannot make that dichotomy. You see? If you don't remove these Kauravas, in the end, eventually, all people will get destroyed. The whole world will get destroyed. You see? So, better remove them now and save posterity. Isn't it? So, we have never made this strong dichotomy. This aside and this side. We know at some point they overlap like that. Yes. So now, what we say to be sin, anything that takes me away from myself, that is called a sin. Anything that takes me closer to myself, that is called a punya. This one is papa. This one is punya. That is all. So, you may find that in the Western tradition, there is something which is considered to be totally a sin. But if that thing is taking me closer to myself, we will not consider it as sin. In Western society, it's very much confused. You have to be very careful about the things that you read and understand and, you know, that you adhere to in Western societies. So it's in Western society, something can be totally legal but immoral. It is totally immoral but legal. Rishis never built societies like that. This society is confused. Confused messages we send out. Like smoking and drinking and all, very much legal. But it is not good, we know that. Not moral. But you have many things like that. So anyway, now, insofar as pap and punya is concerned, what we say, anything that takes us away, that is pap. Anything that takes me towards myself, that is called as punya. So the individual who comes to know the truth by tapas, all his tapas and sadhana, he makes that turn. And he now starts his journey inside. And all of those things that were pulling him away from himself, he leaves them. So he's destroying sin. Destroying sin. It's because he's leaving those unnecessary things, things that are taking him away from himself. And he's getting closer to himself. Now, there's still that idea that I am getting closer to myself. So there's me and myself. Still there's duality. That last thing, that individual or individuality is keeping me away from myself. When he merges, that individuality disappears. Then all sins have gone. That is the last sin. The retention of myness or retention of individuality or the idea of individuation. That retention of that thing is called as the last sin. So when I give up that and I merge, last sin is destroyed. So the sins get destroyed in two stages, as it were. And what happens? Ante swarge loke jaye. Now don't let this swarge loke word fool you. Immediately you will think, oh, the person goes to swarga? In Vedanta, swarga is not held to be enlightenment or liberation. But it says, Anante swarge and jaye. Anante swarge means the swarga which has no end. The swarga which we know has an end. Because tetam bhuktva swarga lokam vishalam kshine punye martya lokam vishanti. After enjoying in this swarga, the person exhausts all his punya karma. He comes back to this world. But what is given here? Anante swarge loke. This is symbolic of enlightenment. That is an endless bliss of Brahman is what is referred to there. Anante loke, swarge loke. The other thing you have, anante swarge, swarga. Swarga has two words in it. Swa and ga. Swa and ga means going towards swa. Swa means oneself. Which is endless, ananta. Ananta means without end. So the person achieves that jaye. He reaches that state and pratitishtati iti. He gets established or emerges, never again to come out. So somebody was asking nicely yesterday. So what happens then when the next? You know, we know the world is cyclical. Satyug, Treta Yug, Dwapar Yug, Kal Yug, and then again Satyug, Treta Yug, Dwapar Yug, Kal Yug, and keeps going like that. So next time, in the next round, will I come back? No. For the person who merges, there is no such thing as any Satyug, Kal Yug, Treta Yug, and Dwapar Yug, and all that. All that also vanishes. Those things exist only for the person who has not merged. So we keep coming in all yugas, and birth after birth, we keep coming. But for the one who merges, not only, it is not that, okay, he merges, And for the rest of people, they keep coming. There is no such thing that remains as rest of people. You cannot say this person merges, but he leaves all his brothers and sisters. Chalo, let them suffer. Not like that. Whatever you experience as world, that is part of you. So if you merge, also world merges. No world is left thereafter. So you don't have to worry. Some people worry about all sorts of things. One man was asking me, Swamiji, if I realize God, I will feel sorry because I leave all my children and everybody to suffer. When I realize God, I leave so many relatives and, you know, the world, people are suffering in the world. Please remember, this universe which you experience is only extension of you. So if you merge, extensions also merge. There is no world left, nothing left. Huh? Merging means everything merges. There is, the person realizes oneness and merges with that oneness. Then the whole variety which we see, that also merges. Because you are talking about oneness. Variety merges. And there are two, in the tradition, there are two types of this merging now. One, I merge while I'm living. They call Jivan Mukti. Other one is called as Videha Mukti. I merge only after I have died. Videha Mukti. Or Gurudev and Shankaracharya and all the great Vedantic thinkers, they adhere to the first one. That is called as Jivan Mukti. We merge while living. As a matter of fact, the other one is very doubtful because nobody has come back to tell. We don't know. Nobody has ever come back to say, yeah, really, I merged, you know. I just came back to tell you. I came back to tell you. So therefore, all the great thinkers, they say, no, we have to merge while living. Then people say, Swamiji, okay, this person merged while living, right? But we still see him there. We still see him acting, doing whatever he's doing. So he has not merged, he's still there. So we say, no. The individuality which was identifying itself as such and such person, that individuality is vanished. And whatever you see there now operating, that is operating only by dint of providence. Means Ishwara is making it operate. Ishwara is making it, that BMI, do whatever it is doing. But the individuality that was there before, there was an individual being there before thinking, I am making it happen. I am making the BMI work. That individuality is gone. So whatever you see there, and you know that is the truth. That is going on in our case also. But there's an individuality who feels we are doing it. But really it is Ishwara who is making it happen. Okay, this is end of the Upanishad. Iti Chaturtha Khandaha. And it ends with Sahana. Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om. Okay, so I hope that in these few days you have picked up something to make your life better.